now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, welcome in. Late Kick is live. It is Thursday night, December 10th, the year of our Lord, 2020. We've got a final week of games in some portions of the country. We've got conference championship games just on the horizon. But I want you to keep in mind that 2020 has, among many other things, thrown your sense of time probably for a loop. So I was just thinking about this earlier as we were putting the show together. And right now, people are talking about the playoff in hypothetical terms. We did a hypothetical video, like 45 minutes worth of it, that we put on the YouTube channel yesterday. And we were just talking about how this could play out, how that could play out. Normally, when you're talking about that, the playoff is way down the road. And I just want you to keep in mind, it's not late November when we would normally be playing the last week of the season. It is December 10th, as I said. And conference championship Saturday is going to be, what, December 19th or something like that. The playoffs are 3 weeks away. The semifinal games are 21 days from this very moment in time. So we don't have much longer to go in the 2020 college football season. However, we can deal with that as it comes. Tonight, we've got a jam-packed show. We are loaded as loaded can be. We are going to do week 15 predictions. Normally, we do those on Tuesday night, but I mean, to be honest, we didn't know which games were going to be played this week on Tuesday. And it's a good thing we waited because a couple of them we would have hit on got canceled on us. I'm going to give you some more out of LSU. Been talking to a whole lot of people out of Baton Rouge this week, so I mean, I can't promise you good news, but I can promise you some more news, at least. Coaching moves, if they're going to happen, they're coming this week. I'm not talking about LSU there. I'm talking about in general. If they're coming, hey, some places they're done playing already for the 2020 season. So coaching moves, if they're coming, this is the weekend. So keep an ear to the ground there. We will, at least. College football playoff, in a very general way, I want to talk about that tonight because I got an interesting email from one of you that I think really, in a lot of ways, mirrored the mentality that many more of you have about the college football playoff. I've seen some articles written on it, and it's just about this. I want you to think about it as we dive in, because it's going to be a couple of minutes before I get to it. So, do you think the college football playoff has hurt the sport of college football overall? The health. If you were to take a health and wellness report, is the sport less healthy because of the playoff? Not is it less healthy today than before the playoff. Is it less healthy because of the playoff? We'll discuss that this evening. Also, the Big Ten threw a really big swerve at you. There wasn't really a swerve at all. We expected it if you watch Late Kick. Whitney won the spelling bee, or the geography bee, in other words. So we're going to talk about that, and we are going to deliver five best bets tonight. We're going to do something in the Ramen Noodle Express we have not done to this point in the season. In fact, I have not put this out on Twitter. I put a pick out on Twitter earlier today, at Late Kick Josh. But what we're doing for the first time in the show's brief history at 24/7, we have not announced publicly. So it's not earth-shattering, but it is going to be a first tonight. Reminder, subscribe to the channel. We have had, bonkers is an overused word, but the traffic on the channel this week has been nothing short of bonkers. Now, there's a lot going on, obviously. We've got potential coaching moves. We've got end-of-the-season stuff, and everything's kind of being funneled into the playoff conversation. We got early signing day coming up next week. We got a full, like, 8-hour special coming up next Wednesday for the early signing day. But there's a lot going on, and you have responded. You've been here. So we've had huge subscription numbers, huge viewer numbers. Thank you so much for that. If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, I'm not going to spend any time on this tonight other than, like, the 20 seconds I'm about to spend on it now. But the SEC, they had a big announcement today. They announced, here's how you know you're a big deal. When you announce that you're going to have an announcement, and the announcement for the announcement in and of itself takes care of the early afternoon news cycle. That's what the SEC is doing these days. So they put out an announcement this morning that they were going to have an announcement. And then the announcement was for something that has been known for quite a while, kind of within the sports media industry, which 99.9% of you don't live in. And so maybe it was news to you today to learn that in 2024 or earlier, but at the very latest, 2024, ESPN, ABC, Disney, they will own exclusive rights to the SEC. No more SEC on CBS. No more of the greatest intro music to ever grace sports media, in all likelihood. I don't know if there's a deal in place for that or not. You are probably losing Gary Danielson. Pause there. Okay, we can move on. This is a big deal, obviously, for your viewing experience, and this is a rainy day topic. When I say rainy day topic, that's sort of this folder that we put stuff in that we could talk about in the offseason. This will be just as pertinent in the offseason. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I'll tell you, very, very strangely, the only thing my mind went to when I saw how many zeros were going to be on the end of this deal was the Pac-12 could not get a network to partner with them for their network. They own their network. And you may look, oh, that's sort of entrepreneurial of them. Good for them. They own their own brand. They own their own network. No, no, friends. They own it because everyone else said, no thanks. Meanwhile, you got a bidding war going on for the Big Ten rights and the SEC rights. And if you want to know in just one sentence or one little short paragraph, one snapshot, why there's such a disparity and the gulf is growing, not shrinking, between the Pac-12 and the likes of the SEC, it really all boils down to this. But why is this happening? It really all just boils down to interest, passion, the rabid nature of fan bases. You know, essentially, some of the stuff that sometimes people tend to look down their nose at you about, well, it leads to things like this. It leads to your TV network for the conference in which your team resides signing a deal that's crazy. I mean, the numbers and the amount of money that will come into member institutions in the SEC because of this, crazy. But like I said, we can talk about that in March, and we can still have it just as relevant as it is tonight. Since we last spoke, the Big Ten has just up and changed their guidelines. Not rules, but guidelines. Very important distinction between the two. And so, essentially, if you've been watching the show for a few weeks, I told you the whole Whitney in fourth grade winning the Geography Bee metaphor, and yes, it came to fruition. So the Whitney of the Big Ten has been really ushered to the Geography Bee final. Ohio State is going to the Big Ten championship game, and they just kind of, they took the pencil, as I said they would, and they turned it upside down, and they erased the initial guidelines, and they just wrote new ones. Heavy is the hand that holds the pencil. If that's never been said, it's being said now. I did not have a strong visceral reaction to this. Now, part A is, well, because we expected it. Part B is because this is one of those situations where I just think there are good arguments to be made both ways. And in other words, I can empathize with the arguments on both sides of the aisle. But listen, the more I thought about this, I wanted to take a little while. I didn't want to be, you know, first to the microphone on this deal. But the more I thought about it, there is obviously no right fix to what was a terminally flawed design. And Colin right now is showing you B-roll of Kevin Warren, who's kind of been the face of this whole thing when it comes to how bad the Big Ten fumbled this. But, you know, understanding the inner workings of this, Kevin Warren can be the face of it, just like Roger Goodell can be the face of the NFL. I mean, it's a lot of administrative types, a lot of largely nameless, faceless to you and I, administrative types that are really behind the decision-making process here. And so, how in the world could it come to this? You know, how in the world, you may be wondering, if you're just a casual fan, you may look and say, this stuff is a really big deal. How could they back themselves into a corner where they start their season and they don't even have the right protocol in place to where, I mean, they can handle it and they can have flexibility? Why are they going to need to, in a front-facing manner, change their own rules? Well, you assume, in thinking that the folks in charge of making the decisions here care as much about this as you do. And that is a very flawed thing to believe. They don't care as much about it as you do. The errors, in other words, let me put it to you like this. The errors that you saw made here, just the glaring oversights that you saw, it's the same kind of thing that happens, you know, like I got a little nephew back home. So if he wants to color with me, I'll take the crayon, I'll color. I mean, I'm not really paying attention to staying inside the lines. I'm not looking to hang this in the Louvre. I'm really just trying to entertain him. So I don't care what the picture looks like. Well, I care as much about the quality of my artwork when I'm painting or coloring with my nephew as the Big Ten powers that be did on the integrity of this football season. Most of them didn't want to have it, okay? You beat at their door long enough to where they acquiesced and they said, okay, give these simpletons their football season. But they didn't take any kind of chunk of time out of their life or their schedule to really think this whole thing through. And so it was, I'll tell you what the football season was. The football season was Big Ten's on the phone and there's a knock at the door and it's just someone walks in, you just go, yeah, whatever, just go. That was how they decided on the football season and the parameters under which the football season would be played. So if you want to know, how could it come to this? That's how it could come to this. So now, was it right or wrong? That was the question most recently being asked. The Big Ten has taken their fair share of criticism, and they should take all the criticism. It's their fault. But is it right or wrong? Well, I think it's the correct decision. Right or wrong from a moral or ethical standpoint, man, like I told you the other day, I feel kind of dirty even talking about it. However, I think it was the right decision. Consider the alternative. Here's what I like to do. So if you're arguing that the rules shouldn't have been changed, Ohio State should have been, therefore, mathematically not eligible for the Big Ten championship game, you know what the arguments right now are. The arguments are, oh, Indiana got screwed because of a technicality. Like, that's the argument right now. Consider the alternative, though. Let's pretend, you and I together, let's pretend that it's not a bunch of administrators. We are the king of the Big Ten. We're the commissioner, and we just rule the whole thing, and it's up to us to make the best decision for the conference. Would you have really made a decision any different? And if you would, remember, it's not just to appease media types or fans. You got to make what the best decision is for the overall greater good of the conference. If you opted not to make this change, it's fair. It's under your purview. Remember, you're the king right now. We're the queen. But I want you to think about what the alternative would mean. Think about this blowback. So you got Ohio State, who's clearly the most quality team up there, and they would have been knocking at your door, pounding on your door, torches and pitchforks in hand, and they would have said, well, number one, we beat that team head-to-head. So if there's any doubt, we actually played a football game on the field. Hey, here's another really solid piece of ammo that I don't think I've heard enough. If Ohio State would have been able to play this weekend, the outcome wouldn't have mattered. They could have gone and lost to Michigan and still qualified. That's how much of a technicality this was. It wasn't that they needed to win. You see, we can make the argument, well, you need to put yourself out there a minimum number of times. Well, that's assuming that you're risking loss. There was no risk. Like, they may have cost themselves a playoff spot if they played and lost to Michigan, who they were a 30-point favorite against. But as it relates to the Big Ten, now, that's not their jurisdiction. Their jurisdiction is, let's decide who needs to be in our title game. Ohio State could have lost to Michigan just as long as they played the game. So I don't feel terrible about that. And also, you're going to have Ohio State, remember, if you don't opt to make this change, you're going to have them telling you, and they'll be right, we fought tooth and nail even against you. In your better judgment, we fought to make this season happen. And so now, because of your incompetence, when you finally did make the season happen, we're going to be the ones to pay the price. So which side, when we look at the two wheelbarrows, which one has more credibility in the argument? Which one has more ammunition in the wheelbarrow? I think the Ohio State side does. So I think they made the right move here. My next focus is just, how good is Ohio State? I think they're really good. Can I really find out a whole lot about you when you play Nebraska, Rutgers, Michigan State, you beat Penn State by 13, Indiana by 7, and then you're going to play Northwestern in the conference title game, and that's coming up next week. I know what our model says. I know what my eyeballs think they've seen, but I don't know. And they haven't gotten half the work and half the experience under their belt this year that some of the teams they may face in the playoff have. So that's just something to think about down the line. We're moving on. We got a lot to get to tonight. We got predictions coming up. We got best bets coming up. Something about the playoff. It's not playoff predictions, though. But I wanted to go to LSU again tonight because we had overwhelming feedback when we talked about LSU the other night. There's this strange thing when we talk about LSU. Number one, we have a lot of Tiger fans who watch the channel and who are subscribers. But then, because of the run they went on last year, I think LSU, at least for the time being, has morphed from a regional brand into a national college football brand. And the way you know that is when I can go in our analytics and I can look at the geographical metadata, I got folks watching these LSU videos from all four corners of the country and in between. So they're moving the needle pretty much anywhere where we have subscribers. And so because of that, I've followed up a lot on this LSU deal. Things aren't good down there. I think that's pretty obvious to anyone who has watched an LSU game this year. What are the problems, though? Like, if you're the kind who checks in for 3 hours on a Saturday, but then you live your life Monday through Friday, and you don't really keep up with the inner workings and the behind-the-scenes whispers, rumblings, well, number one, you probably live a lot more stress-free life. But number two, you know the team's bad. You may not be aware that, you know, the team element, what is a team? It was never there. We've talked about that a lot now about LSU. Just never was a team this year. There is a massive Title IX investigation, the report from which is due in February, which could derail all of this. And by all of this, I mean, up to and including the man Colin is showing you on the screen right now, Ed Orgeron. We'll talk about that in a second. There's been a lot of internal strife, both staff-wise and locker room-wise this year. The roster has been badly mismanaged. That is due to a number of things, not the least of which are just poor evaluations. There's no other way to put that. And then you add on to that internal strife, maybe guys not wanting to stick around. This is not the 4-H club where when someone just wants to quit, you could just add someone else. That's not the way a college football roster operates. And there were bad hires made. There's no other way to put that. And just a lot of this falls on the head man. That if you want to shoulder all the credit, you got to shoulder the blame. That's the way, when you're in a leadership position, that's the way it works. Two major questions. Can't get over these two major questions. One we asked the other night, and that is, how many of these problems are 2020? In other words, when we put the lid on 2020 and then we move on and we open up 2021, how many of the problems will still be there? And that remains to be seen. But the second question, and you, if you can figure this one out, then you let me know. Twitter DMs are open, inbox is open. Think about what I'm about to ask you. How do you address the element that has been viewed as both the solution and the problem within a 12-month span? Because that's Ed Orgeron at LSU. January, I was walking off the field in the Superdome in New Orleans. Ed Orgeron walked back out. I actually stood on the 20-yard line and talked to him in an empty stadium for a few minutes. Just kind of a surreal night. I mean, you guys who were there, this is it. Colin's showing it to you. A lot bigger crowd there than when I talked to him about an hour later. But that night, so euphoric. The feeling, so euphoric. It was unprecedented, but now the turn has been unprecedented. At this very moment in time, if you're watching and Colin's showing you, I mean, this is footage straight from the eye, Josh, just walking right off the field after a national championship win. At that very moment in time, had I gone up in that crowd and I would have slandered the good name of Ed Orgeron, folks in LSU would have been ready to fight you in defense of him. I kid you not. Now they're ready to fight you in some cases if you defend him. How does this happen? That was January of 2020. This is December of 2020. I'm about to say something else that I myself have a very hard time believing, but it's not coming out of my mouth. I'm just issuing a sort of parroted response or sort of a parroted forwarding of a message that I've gotten from some people that are in the know in and around LSU, in and around Baton Rouge. This is not a joke. There are people who don't think he's going to survive this. And when I say this, I mean this in all caps, because it's not one thing. And to be honest, if Ed Orgeron was not the head coach at LSU for non-health-related reasons, let's say, in 2021, if he were not the head coach there, my jaw would be on the ground. That would stun me. And it would be obvious, if he's not the head coach there in 2021, something much greater than football has come along to, as I said, derail what they've got going there. I don't care how bad you are on the field. The year after winning a national title, you can go 0 and whatever and lose by a million. You're not getting fired for football-related reasons. Even the most rabid fan base and the most rabid conference in America on steroids would never do that. However, we all know now there is more going on down there. That Title IX stuff's nothing to mess around with, and I don't have any details. I don't pretend to have any details on that, but I would just tell you there is, to say the least, a lot of uncertainty around there. So we go back to the question now, and this is going to be a question that's not going to be answered after the Florida game this Saturday or after, well, they're not going to a bowl game. More on that in a second. Just, oh, such a stunning and brave move at the hands of LSU. But how do you rectify this? You want to put a positive spin on it, and I've seen some of you try and do it. I'm all on board with it. Trust me, a good LSU is good for late kick, and so I'm rooting for them. How do you fix it? How do we figure out a way to fix it? A lot of folks, well, I won't say a lot, there are folks who believe that they're just a few staff moves and another recruiting class and one more offseason away from largely seeing the dark clouds part and the sun shine through again. And I hope, again, for your sake, that's true. But I got to ask you, and this is kind of a rhetorical, we'll go metaphorical, rhetorical here. When we get that merch line going, that's a t-shirt. I think about it like this. If you got the right driver, if he's the right leader, if Ed Orgeron is the right driver for the finely tuned automobile that should be LSU football, then you could change the pit crew out and you may very well have yourself a championship caliber product again. But if you got the wrong driver in the car, it doesn't matter. If you got your little sister driving, if you got your grandma driving, the best pit crew in the history of NASCAR is not getting her to victory lane. And so the question becomes again, because a lot of these criticisms really are rooted in poor culture, which is cultivated, or it's unable to be cultivated because of poor leadership. What are staff changes going to do about that? How is a new defensive coordinator going to change that? Like, I don't know those answers. And I'm very hesitant to buy into this notion that, oh, a few staff changes here and there, that'll be the difference. Well, that old adage, rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, that exists for a reason. Like, you could make the deck of the Titanic look different. Doesn't matter. It's still going down. Is that what LSU football is? If so, it would be the most spectacularly horrific collapse. And I'm not going to say the history of college football only because I wasn't around in 1937. However, it would be noteworthy. Let me just say that. So I think that we're going to see a lot of movement, to say the least. Staff-wise, they are in line to lock down a top five recruiting class, maybe even more lofty than that next week and then moving into the early portion of 2021. But this is, if you want something on top of your program, like if you're a Michigan State fan or a Colorado fan, if you want something to track on top of your program over the coming weeks and months, LSU football, there will be no shortage of news breaking out of Baton Rouge.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, let's move on. A platform that LSU dominated last year. We didn't do a classic late kick extra today. We did the college football playoff scenario roundtable. So normally on Thursday morning, if you're a subscriber to the Late Kick podcast, you get something in that feed that you don't get on the YouTube channel, and that is strictly Q&A. We call it the Late Kick Extra podcast. And I just take your questions, I answer them. It's a very revolutionary concept, I know. But this morning, we did something different. Therefore, I didn't get to all the questions we got from this week. And so I wanted to hit one of them right now. Jeremy asked something that a lot of you have asked. I've seen some national guys writing about this week. He just asked simply, has the college football playoff hurt the sport of college football overall? So I wanted to take a poll. You're listening or you're watching right now, live or replay. I just want you to think to yourself, you're probably all alone. If you're not, explain what you're about to do to your loved ones who are watching you, or else they're going to think weird things. But I just want to take a poll. I want you to raise your hand out there if you think the playoff has hurt the sport of college football overall. And I know what the reasons are, so you tell me if I nail down one or more of your reasons here. The reasons that I normally hear, I wrote them down. So all the focus goes to the college football playoff. A lot of the coverage goes to the college football playoff. Only the teams who are in the playoff hunt get coverage late in the season. And then like 90% of the sport doesn't have the spotlight shown on it. Also, games outside the college football playoff sphere, so if it doesn't have playoff implications, in other words, they just don't matter. Bowls, a lot of bowls are deemed kind of irrelevant. Is that most of it? There's one more, and I'm going to address it separately. But basically, a lot of you just feel the college football playoff has sucked all the attention out of the room, and it's put it on about 10 teams at the expense of about 120 teams. Do you feel that way? Because if you feel that way, I feel that way along with you. But I got to ask you something. Has the college football playoff hurt the sport? Or is the way the playoff is covered hurting the sport? Because those are two different things. The playoff could be totally innocent here, and the folks charged with covering this sport could be doing you a disservice. If you're a fan of North Carolina football right now, you guys got a big game Saturday against Miami. I know, because we're about to talk about it in the show. Don't see many other people talking about it. We do things a little bit differently on our show because of the very problems that I have listened to you state about the playoff. We're not too good to listen to our audience here. And so when you guys say that stuff, I listen. And if you want evidence of that, think back, the regular listeners and viewers to the show. Think back over the last few months, so the college football season. How many playoff segments have you seen me do or listened to me do? How many playoff projections have we done? How many brackets has Colin made up graphically and put on the screen? And here's where we think the Rose Bowl is right now. And here's where we think things will be in Miami second week of January. The next time we do that will be the first time we've done it. We haven't done hardly any playoff conversation. In fact, this is one of the very few college football playoff segments that we've done the entire season. And the reason is not because of the fact that it wouldn't do traffic. Those segments would get us a lot of views. They would do really good traffic. I don't think it's what's best for the sport. And I would like to contribute in some small way to the overall health of the sport. Here's the thing about the playoff. We're going to have so much time to talk about that. We're going to have a ton of time, even in a truncated year. We got a ton of time to talk about that. I have been of the opinion, as are apparently a lot of you, that there is too much attention paid on this thing at the expense of the overall greater good of the sport. But see, I don't view that as a playoff problem. I just think the folks who cover the sport need to take it upon themselves and understand there's a little responsibility to contribute to the health of the sport. I mean, at the very core of your role, I mean, you are a conduit between the product and the viewer, the product and the fan, the game and the fan. You got to do your job better. So I'm putting my money where my mouth is because we don't do all the playoff stuff. And it when we do it, it gets a lot of views. So, I mean, we could up our traffic in doing that, and we still don't do it. But there's another argument, okay? For those of you who raised your hand, and then I read all the reasons, and you said, no, you didn't read my reason. Your reason is probably this. Your reason is probably, well, it just allows the same few teams to dominate the sport over and over and over again. Same teams make the playoff. Evidence, Josh. Check this out. Ohio State won it in 2014, and then Bama won it in 2015, and then it was Clemson, and then it was Bama, and then it was Clemson. And it's just the same teams over and over and over again. So that in and of itself is a fact. The same few teams have dominated in the playoff era. So I would ask you, because I totally disagree. I think those are non sequiturs. Causation and correlation, two different things there. I would ask you, how would you fix that? Because if you come at me with playoff expansion, well, I'll beat that down like a pinata, and you guys know me well enough to know that by now. But how would you fix that? I mean, would playoff expansion really fix that? Like expanding to eight teams all of a sudden negates Alabama's stranglehold on being able to lock down one of these spots every year? Truth be told, the exclusivity of the college football playoff field only being at four is probably the only thing that's kept Bama out of it every single year and keeps Ohio State out of it every single year. And once they get in, I think you understand what they do once they do get in. You understand in general what the more talented rosters do once they get in there and have a few weeks to get ready, right? You know that doesn't look any different, right? Okay, if we're on the same page there. But I want to also offer to you, the playoff's not the reason those teams are dominating. The playoff just so happens to be congruent to something else that's happened. A couple of things, actually, as far as I can tell, that have occurred. And it just happens to be that the timelines have synced up. Let me give you two other things, two other little elephants that are in the room, oxymoron there. Number one, as you probably noticed, there's been a pretty sizable influx of cash in this sport over the last 20-some-odd years. Money is a great, great contributor to the gulf that is growing by the day and the difference between the haves and the have-nots. Now, I want you to ask yourself, is it just because these teams reside in wealthy portions of the United States? No. Not a whole lot of Fortune 5 companies in Clemson, South Carolina, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama, but they care. They just care more. Here's what the money did. The influx in cash gave virtual launching pads and the ability to purchase launching pads to put the programs that are run correctly on. And then they rocketed into orbit. Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson's done it, Georgia's kind of sitting on the launching pad. It's a really cool looking launching pad. Hadn't found the fuse yet, but don't worry, in due time. Oklahoma, kind of the same way. But you know the song and dance. You know which programs we're talking about here. They were already run the right way. These were already solid programs, and they were in the right place, and the right time found them. It wasn't just a completely stupid happenstance stroke of luck. That's not how that works. They were ready, and then the cash allowed them to separate. Conversely, you got all the money in the world at Texas, and you can't take a leak without getting the front of your pants wet. So the difference there is not the money. The difference is some places know how to run their stuff and other places don't. The money allows you to just rocket into orbit. And here's the second part. Look at how offense has changed in college football quarterback's always been the most important position in this sport, at least in your and my lifetimes it has been. But understand what the quarterback position is today. With the evolution of offenses, the way Nick Saban was winning just a decade ago would get him run out of the building against his own teams today. So what's changed? Well, what's changed is having a good quarterback used to mean you had a pretty good chance. But with the way the quarterback position has been weaponized today, it's like having access to nuclear missiles versus someone who doesn't. You got all the keys. If you got Trevor Lawrence, or you got Justin Fields, or you got Kyle Trask, or Tua Tagovailoa, or Mac Jones, and you got the weapons around them, and all those players want to go play at the places that have the best quarterbacks, now you see how the separation happens. But my question to you, you can't disagree with any of that. That's just reality. Those are facts. They stare you in the face every Saturday. My question is, what about the playoff contributed to any of that? That just so happens the playoff has come along in the last few years, but it hasn't contributed to that. If you scrap the playoff tomorrow, that stuff would still be going on. The money's not going anywhere. The offensive evolution's not going anywhere. In fact, it's still going in the same direction, and both respectively are trending up, up, up. Playoff's not doing any of that. Contracting the playoff, expanding the playoff, it's not going to change who dominates this sport. But if you believe that, I'll leave you with this. If you believe that there's been this unimpenetrable wall that's been built between the haves and the have-nots, and there's this exclusive club and most of us aren't allowed in it, how do you explain LSU last year? They weren't one of those. They weren't a perennial elite. They weren't there in 2014 or 15, 16, 17, 18. But then all of a sudden, not only did they make the playoff in 2019, they won the national championship in 2019. And some call them the best team of all time. How'd they do it? Well, they invested, and then they hit a home run at quarterback. That's all you got to do. That's all. It's that easy. Just get a generational quarterback and get full buy-in. These things sound so simple. Of course, they're not. But those are the differences. That's why you have the few and then the many standing outside looking through the fence at the few. It's not the playoff. The playoff is this scapegoat or an escapegoat. It's that straw man that's built over in the corner because it's much easier, trust me, for an administrator or a coach to say, oh, it's cause of the playoff, than it is for them to look in the mirror and say, boy, we've really screwed things up here, haven't we? Let's move on. There are some programs that are in a variety of degrees of being screwed up right now. And that's why this time of year, coaching searches happen, or you have rumors of coaching searches. Now, some weeks we have more news to talk about than others here. A lot of times it's not news. A lot of times there is nothing new to quote-unquote report, and if it was, this is not the place that we report, but we do talk about it. But I just want to go around the table here, and some places not much has changed since you and I talked Tuesday night. But I wanted to start at Texas, and I'm going to go around the room here, and we'll just talk about what the latest is we've heard and what could be coming this weekend on these matters. Tom Herman at Texas. They had the game against Kansas that was scheduled for Saturday. It's canceled. It's not postponed. It's just canceled. The Longhorn season is over. They may not even go to a bowl game. It's going to be a choice thing, but they may not go to a bowl game. You may have seen the last game for Texas in 2020. So what now? Are the decision makers, here's what I'd love to know, are the decision makers at Texas waffling as much as some of the Texas folks I talked to? And you know who you are. I'm not calling you out by name. There's several of you who were off the Tom Herman train prior to Kansas State and then hopped right back on. Well, obviously, you can't afford to be doing that if you're a decision maker. So I'm just curious, is this a game-by-game thing? I've never believed in that. I'm about to talk about it with Malzahn at Auburn, too. I don't believe in that. Here's what I do believe. What I do believe is they're not going to get Urban Meyer in all likelihood. I suppose never say never. I heard his comments today, I think it was, on Cowherd's show. He doesn't sound like he's done coaching to me, but then again, when he talked to me for 25 minutes and we put it on YouTube back in the spring, I told you then, I don't think he's done coaching. So it's never sounded to me like he's done. Doesn't really matter a whole lot for Texas if they can't get him, though. They hope he is done if they can't get him. But the question is, has been, and continues to be, is there a list below Urban Meyer you're willing to part ways with Tom Herman for? We are beating the drum and kind of beating a dead horse at this point asking that, so I'm going to kind of move pretty quickly through this, but if there's not, if it was Urban Meyer or another year of Tom Herman, boy, oh boy, there was no keeping the toothpaste in the tube. If you're targeting Urban Meyer, it takes too much of a collective force. It takes too many people to be on board to keep their mouth shut. So you were going to find out. So we found out they went after Urban Meyer. If they swung and missed, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Everybody knows it. Not only does Tom Herman know it, his entire staff knows it, his entire roster knows it, all the personnel folks in the four walls down there know it, and every major recruit knows it. How do you operate? Like, with both your legs cut out from under you, they were already having a hard enough time, in case you haven't noticed. How do they operate now? Like, can you imagine that entire environment next year if he is indeed brought back? The toothpaste in the tube, boy, it's one of the most powerful metaphors out there, because you ever tried to do it, put it back in there? It's easy to squeeze out. It's easy to go after Urban Meyer. But if he tells you no, you're going to have to borrow your buddy's toothpaste, because you're not brushing your teeth with all this stuff all over the place here. How about Gus Malzahn and Auburn? We're going to predict their game in just a few minutes. But Gus Malzahn and Auburn, there have been a lot of rumors that things have been decided there. Sunday morning, you will see a press release out of Auburn. Gus Malzahn's been fired. The best I can tell down there, and I grew up close to Auburn, know quite a few people around the program, I don't believe that to be true. When I say that, I just don't believe any decision's been made there. I don't believe one way or the other they have come down and gavel has hit table and it's just a formality at this point. I don't believe that. It could very well happen. I don't believe they've arrived at that decision, which means if I'm right about that, and if the people who I've talked to are right, then it technically means minds could still be swayed. If there are people on the fence, if the decision itself is riding on the fence, well, by the very nature of riding a fence, you could still fall either way. Which leads me to wonder, as ridiculous as it would be 8 years into someone's tenure, could four quarters of football this Saturday against Mississippi State seriously be what a lot of people are waiting to see? Again, I view that wholeheartedly as ridiculous. 4 years in, that's ridiculous. Much less 8 years. You either know or you don't know. Nothing they do is a 6.5-point favorite on the road at Starkville, Mississippi at the end of the year in a throwaway game, by a lot of metrics, is going to tell you anything you don't already know. But nevertheless, crazier things have happened. So here's the other interesting question I had posed to me by someone who was speculating. They were throwing a couple names at me. If there was an Auburn head coaching opening, which I won't throw out here now, it would be fun, but I'm not going to do that. But what they ask me, sort of rhetorically, is think to yourself, could there be a candidate out there that's not on the public radar that Auburn already has a pretty good idea they could get if they went after, that would be a solid upgrade for Malzahn? So he checks all the boxes. We're going to pay that buyout money. We want a solid upgrade. What if they know of a name out there through back channels that they could get a yes from that maybe isn't on anyone's radar? That stuff happens. It absolutely happens. When you got money to throw around, especially, that does happen. And I don't think finance is the biggest issue. And in fact, I don't think finance is are an obstacle standing between Auburn and making this decision at all. But I will just sort of reiterate some things that I know the folks over on our auburnundercover.com board I have reported, and I hear the same stuff from down there when I talk to people. This staff's not been a good staff. The chemistry has not really been much of any this year. It's not the most closely knit coaching staff in the SEC. Sometimes you get that. Alabama had that a few years ago. Sometimes that just happens. Here's the problem. Unlike Alabama, where Nick Saban has his pick of pretty much anyone he wants, Malzahn, sometimes people don't realize this. Look at his trajectory as a coach. He really hasn't been many places. And what happens when you haven't been many places is you don't really have an extensive network. Like, how many coaches does Gus Malzahn really know, first off? And I mean know intimately. And secondly, he, even if he's back next year, is understood universally to be skating on thin ice with hot blades. So then you got to ask yourself, who wants to volunteer for that? And keep in mind, if we're going to make staff changes at Auburn, if Malzahn stays, but we're going to make staff changes, you also got to understand this. We're looking to hit home runs with those hires. I mean, if Kevin Steele were to move on, we're looking to bring in the next Kevin Steele. You're going to have to massively overpay relative to market value if you are going to land some big names. Because people want stability. They want financial stability, but they just want professional stability. No one wants to go to a place where they know they may be back in the unemployment line in 12 months, buyout or no buyout. No one wants to sign up for that, or at least very few people do. And the other thing to note, it's been kind of thrown around this week. A lot of you have observed this, and I was kind of thinking along the lines with you. There's been no public support. There has been no statement from any athletic director, Green, down there. There's been no board of trustee members talking. The president down there hasn't said a word. Not that they owe it to anyone to do that, but normally You know, this kind of stuff can tend to erode at recruiting. That's already nothing to write home about for Auburn this year. So normally you want to quiet that if it's false, and there has been none of that. So if Malzahn is to be let go after his game Saturday, which I have no knowledge of, but if he is to be let go, you'll probably look back and say, oh, the tea leaves were all over the place. Why didn't you notice them? And the other one I want to talk about tonight, just a second here, is one we haven't really touched on all that much, and that's Justin Fuente of Virginia Tech. They got a big game. We're going to talk about it in a second, too. They got a big game against Virginia Saturday. It's the rivalry game, obviously. It is pretty widely accepted within the industry that Justin Fuente's out after this year. And Virginia Tech is pretty widely to be considered one of the more underrated jobs in the sport right now. Good conference, stable infrastructure there. It's a very opportune spot if you're a good recruiter to put together a really good product. The game day environment there is phenomenal. The fan base is very passionate. You get good support. And so maybe you just don't have the coach right now. So it is pretty widely to almost universally thought he's out. I'll tell you what's funny is I was scanning some of our boards today. I went over to our Virginia Tech board. As much as they want Gus gone on the Auburn board, someone floated Gus Malzahn on the Virginia Tech board. As far as Virginia Tech is concerned, Malzahn's already been fired at LSU. He is now on the market, and we are openly speculating, despite the fact that we don't have a coaching opening at Virginia Tech right now, whether we hypothetically want Gus Malzahn at Virginia Tech. And the answer was yes, overwhelmingly. Just something to keep in mind if you're down there in Lee County near Auburn watching this. There are fan bases out there that would love for you to toss Gus on the scrap heap. So maybe he won't be unemployed for long. We'll see. As for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, I was going to talk about him tonight. There's nothing new to talk about. It's the same old. Let's wait until the end of the season, which is now. And then let's, you know, we may be waiting more for definitive conclusions on the NFL side of things, for people to know if they're going to make a move on the NFL side of things, and therefore Jim Harbaugh then knows if he's going to make a move. But then again, as we documented the other night, then maybe it's a moot point. Maybe he plans on staying and just restructuring that deal. I think this weekend will tell the tale, obviously, on a whole lot of this stuff. Speaking of this weekend, we got a pretty underrated slate. I've said this a few times this year, but it's the lead up to conference championship Saturday. There are some consequential games for a number of different reasons this Saturday. So let's go across the country right quick. North Carolina is playing at Miami Saturday. It's a mid-afternoon game. It's 3:30 Eastern time on ABC. The Canes are a 3-point favorite here. Some of you have noticed how anonymous Miami feels. You know they're a top 10 team. If I were to say top 10 Miami, that would be a factual statement. They are number 10 in the college football playoff rankings. The reason they're anonymous is because they don't really have much of a shot at the college football playoff. They don't have any shot. They are not going to go to the conference championship game, and they don't really have a signature win. And they got the national stage game against Clemson. They got blown out. And so it's just kind of been off a lot of people's radar. This could be a really good game, though. These are two really good teams. Not great, but really good. And the Miami defense, if the last time you saw North Carolina was against Notre Dame, the Miami defense could very well have the ability to do to North Carolina's offense what Notre Dame did, made them very one-dimensional. It was Sam Howell's game. They couldn't run the ball for anything all afternoon or all evening, and it was on Sam Howell's shoulders, couldn't get it done. Notre Dame's a really good team. That's nothing to shake a stick at, but probably a little bit better pass rush here with Miami, too. So you can make them one-dimensional. It's been done this year. It could be done again. It's a weird game, though, because our model really likes North Carolina. It's got the Heels winning the game outright by 1 point. And I think the balance offensively with Miami, coupled with the pass rush ability and the ability to disrupt that offense and potentially still make them one-dimensional, I don't think North Carolina will have a ton of success running the ball. I just think Miami's the better team. And I think that this really is their conference title game. I mean, they're not going to one, obviously. I think Miami's going to win. I actually think they'll win and they'll cover the three. So you give me the Canes there. Auburn, we just talked about. They're 6.5-point favorite at Mississippi State. It's a nighttime game, 7:30 Eastern time on SEC Network. It's much bigger than it appears for a couple of reasons. Number one, now we don't know this, but always operate under the assumption that Gus Malzahn's job's on the line until you've been told otherwise. So that's in play. But also, I think the metered market of College Station, Texas, will have a vested interest in this game. A&M needs Auburn to look as good as they possibly can because A&M needs to bolster their resume as good as they possibly can. They just beat Auburn. It would very much help the Aggies' cause if Auburn were to end the season on a high note. This is a Malzahn moment. If you followed Auburn, you know what I'm talking about. This is nothing new for him, okay? Feeling the heat, having his job on the line, that's old hat for him. And it's also when he tends to rise up the most. And his teams, I'll give him a ton of credit, he is able to get his teams to save his job for him more effectively than any coach I've ever seen in my lifetime. And that's what we may be on tap for this Saturday. Now, here's the problem. The problem is Mississippi State is not impressive record-wise, but they got the number three rushing defense in the conference. So this is not one of those Tank Bigsby and company run up and down the field all day. They may have some success, moderately, but if you've noticed, since that little roster reduction, Mississippi State's played some pretty inspired football. They are not ready to lay down. This is not a team that's mailed it in against all odds. Phil Collins reference, one a week. They have not mailed it in. And if you can't run it consistently on them, guess what we have to have? We have to have road Bo Nix come through for Gus Malzahn and win him a game. I think he will, but I don't think it'll be pretty. However, in the end, late score maybe, I think Auburn will win, and I do think they'll cover. And then Malzahn will wipe his hands, and he'll put his hands on his hips, and he'll look over at the Auburn Board of Trustees, and he'll say, your move. I'm going to be rich either way. Your move. Georgia is a 13-point favorite at Missouri. It's an early kickoff. Noon window Eastern time on SEC Network. These are important games here. This is an important game for both teams. Georgia, I kind of look at this as 2021 already for them. JT Daniels, in all likelihood, is back. And therefore, I mean, they're already working on their offense for next year. You might as well look at this as an extension of spring for them. And Missouri's just working on their future entirely. I mean, Drinkwitz got there, and then you have the pandemic. And, oh, by the way, you're going to play Florida and Alabama. Have fun with it. Get after it, boys. And so there's a lot to work on. You know, if you're not going to have extended bowl practice, that's kind of your bowl practice period. You just happen to get to play a game in the middle of it. That Georgia game plan against South Carolina is probably a rinse and repeat situation here. The only difference is I don't think Missouri has mailed it in quite to the degree that South Carolina has. You remember that South Carolina game. Georgia just ran the ball, ran the ball, ran the ball, pass. Run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, pass. And that's probably about the run-to-pass ratio we'll see Saturday. Missouri could be drained. They could be. They were down like 40-26 and ended up somehow winning the game against Arkansas last week. I think it was 48-47. They could be drained. They could be. I think they'll have some fight in them this week, though. This does not, again, unlike South Carolina, this is not a team that with nothing to play for. And so they've overcome a lot this year. You know, if you want to paint this as their Super Bowl, you get Georgia, very end of the year, Georgia over there working on some things, maybe they rise up. Jordan Davis is probably going to play Saturday for Georgia. And if he does, saw Jake Rowe say this earlier today, and he's dead on the money. Jordan Davis has probably gone to the NFL after this. He is the interior defensive tackle for Georgia. If he comes back this weekend, you've got a guy, when all the folks around him are opting out, not at Georgia, but in the sport, you've got a guy with every reason to opt out who has probably, if he plays Saturday, gone through rehab like a madman to get back on the field this year to play the last however many games Georgia's going to play. If he starts, if he doesn't start, it's not because of lack of effort, but if he does start, if he plays Saturday, a lot of credit to Jordan Davis and the team up there at Georgia. I've got Georgia winning this game. Our model likes Missouri to cover, though. So a little closer game maybe than you expect in these end-of-year type situations with overwhelmingly more talented rosters. Give me Georgia to win, Missouri plus 13. How about Virginia? The 2.5-point underdog, Cavaliers, by the way, at Virginia Tech. Primetime game on ACC Network, so dozens of people will be waiting to watch this one, but I'll be one of them. I don't get it. We have talked about this game all week in our best bets. I'm going to emphatically talk about it at the very end of this show coming up in just a few minutes. Virginia Tech is done, and they've been done for a little while now. We just talked about Justin Fuente. I think he also fits that description. Virginia, conversely, has been playing the best ball they've played all year. And Armstrong, I think you got an edge at quarterback, first off, with Virginia. I think you got a coaching edge with Virginia at quarterback, just team-wise. You know what? I'm kind of trying to nail it down into compartments. Team-wise, if you've watched these two teams, how do you love anything Virginia Tech's done lately? How do you hate anything Virginia's done lately? And so, you know, a lot of times, and I hear this a lot, people will look at this and say, well, those odds makers know something. Well, okay, be scared of them then. Be scared. But I'll tell you right now, this model I have in front of me has hit 60% against the spread this year and historically has done very well. So I'll trust these numbers. These numbers tell me Virginia Tech's winning the game or Virginia's winning the game outright Saturday. We love them to win outright. So I'll take the 2.5, But just give me Virginia to win the game outright. Coaching edge, quarterback edge, team edge, chemistry edge, mojo edge, a lot of edges there. And home field's not a big deal this year. So give me the Cavaliers. And lastly, Southern Cal's a 2.5-point favorite at UCLA. 7:30 Eastern, kickoff on ABC. USC's 4-0. Normally that would mean, hey, getting to the midpoint of the season, Southern Cal, can they remain undefeated? Still got a long way to go. No, they don't. They got one game left. This is it. You start off 4-0, and this is it. UCLA, I'll give them credit too. Chip Kelly, there's probably not a program out there that had more of an excuse to be terrible this year. And yet, UCLA, 3-2. They got a couple of losses to Colorado, undefeated. Oregon, one of the better teams in the Pac-12. So Chip Kelly and the guys out there have done a really good job. They got into their building like 5 minutes before the season started. So they had every reason to be bad, and they've been pretty okay this year. There is a big gap, however. UCLA, defensively, big gap between playing the haves and the have-nots. Because when they've played winning teams this year, that defense, limited sample size, mind you, that defense has given up 40 points per game. So USC, don't like the running game. Think offensively they can have enough success here. I'm going to take Southern Cal to win, and I will lay the 2.5 with the Trojans. Those are our picks of the week. But now, best bets of the week. The Ramen Noodle Express chugging along at 59.7% against the number. Again, round up at your convenience. We started the week, and we gave you Virginia plus 2.5 as our best bet. Colin had it nice and neat on the graphic there. And then, all right, that's all with the Cavaliers this week, right? But the more we went through the week, the more I said, you know what, Colin? I really like this game. I really do. And then Ohio had their game canceled. And so I could have done a couple things. I could have gone and found another game. Or I could have just said, you know what we're going to do for the first time this year? We're going to double up. So in other words, we're going to, I guess, make it our game of the year. Don't like to term it that way because, you know, it could lose. But we are doubling up on Virginia. So we're taking them twice. This will count for two games for record-keeping purposes, which means for your financial purposes, bet double the amount you normally would. We're taking Virginia plus 2.5. We're taking Colorado minus 1. That game's been moved to Saturday. Number still stands, though. Wake plus 2.5 versus Louisville. And we're going to bet against Alabama. We're going to take Arkansas plus 32. So Virginia plus 2.5, Virginia plus 2.5, Colorado minus 1, Wake Forest plus 2.5, and Arkansas plus 32. It has been a busy week. It's going to be a fun weekend. It's going to be an action-packed weekend on the field and probably off the field. There is no telling, quite literally, what we could be talking about at this very desk come Sunday night. Make sure you're tuned in. For Director Colin, for Producer Jordan on the podcast side of things, I'm Josh Pate. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for making it a record-setting week for us. We'll see you Sunday night. Enjoy the games, and God bless.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.